This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are joined by Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of counterintelligence behavioral analysis, to discuss Chad and Lori Daybell. Lori's trial coming up here less than a month from now, and everything being split apart between the two. I don't know necessarily about their relationship being split apart, other than the fact that they can't see each other whatsoever. But what's going on here is Chad wants more time. He's waived his right to a speedy trial so they can put together a better defense for him. And Lori's wants out. She thinks she's going to be exonerated, or that they should just throw the whole darn thing out, because what on earth would you be doing looking at me? My children were missing for months on end, and I lied about it, and then they found her dead in my boyfriend or husband's backyard. Why on earth would I be under any sort of suspicion? Let me start with all of that there, Robin. What are your thoughts on the fact that the trial has been split into two now?
Since it's such an unusual case, in a sense that you have a couple of individuals that have had a really deep conviction on a point of view on life in the world and context from their religion and that cult they were part of, which inspired them to take actions that were outside the normal human behavior. Mm-hmm. That's a really complicated way to say, man, they're
true.
A little off.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that they got that information, they had that lifestyle from information they consume. We basically are what we consume. And we've heard the expression, you are what you eat. Mm-hmm. You are also the information you consume. That's how these cult leaders form cults, because they infiltrate people's brains with information that manipulates them into thinking a certain way. What's interesting is, I'm curious, because we've seen this with other convicted killers, where they go to prison, they are indoctrinated into a new way of thinking, they find religion, they find peace. Some don't, obviously, but others, you know, totally rehab themselves. I mean, and come out the other side with a whole different perspective of life. And since these two have been behind bars a while, and maybe a way, so I don't know what information they've been exposed to, I'd be curious as to, has their mindset shifted at all? From the actions they've taken, from the beliefs they had, because when you stop being exposed to that kind of information, the mind's going to shift back to something else potentially. So that'd be my only curiosity on this. And that's why it's interesting that they're dividing the case, mm-hmm. because even without the support of each other to manifest groupthink, if they go to individual think, it'd be interesting to see any of their shifts that might have happened.
I'm curious about both of them individually. Let's break it down that way for a moment.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Chad first, because Chad is the one who was the author. He's the one who was into this kind of way of thinking prior to even Lori. Lori seemed to be someone who was looking for something. It seems that she was perpetually looking for something by the amount of marriages that she had and the way that she just kind of conducted her life. For some reason, Chad fit that void at some right time and seemed very, very appealing to her. What I'm curious about Chad, though, and his writings, and what we know about him, is that, you know, he was kind of an awkward guy a little bit, was married, obviously, but then he found, as I would just put it, he found the hot one. And she was much more attractive than his wife, I believe, in his opinion. And I think there was something there that he would probably say or do anything if the Lori would go along and believe it. What I question is, how much did Chad believe his own BS? Or was he using this as a way to feel important, to have some sort of grandioseness about himself where he didn't have it in other places in his life? And now he had one woman who was really, really into him in his readings writings. And he just kind of kept going down the road. I just wonder how much he believed the things he was peddling.
Yes to all you said. And I mean, it's why the polygraph's not admissible in court. And that's because if you start believing your own lies, it becomes your truth.
Yeah.
And you'll pass a polygraph on it because things like that measure our emotional response to stimulus, you mm-hmm. know, and stimulus being words, thoughts, and questions. And the more you start telling yourself your own lies or belief systems, you know, you create false memories and you create false beliefs of what is. And when you compound that on top of really unhealthy behaviors from whatever trauma he experienced earlier in life or whatever malformations and chemical imbalances he may or may not have in the brain, but at the very least, he's had trauma experiences that require pacifying behaviors for making him feel better and cover up insecurities he may have. And then when you find, so it makes you compound that and makes you a predator for individuals that are trying to satisfy that unrequited, you know, urges yeah. you have. And then you find a victim that is susceptible because of the same types of trauma experiences growing up and needs for acceptance and validation, and understanding. And then you have that recipe for exactly what happened.
And that's what I wonder about with when, I mean, to go to the extreme, it's one thing where it's like, oh, well, this hot lady is into me and it's great. But then to go down this road of, you know, the we're convincing ourselves that our children are zombies. And all these other people in our life are zombies. And this is straight out of his mind. This wasn't even material that he you know, read somewhere else. I'm sure it was inspired by something somewhere to get him to where he's at. But so much of it just seemed to be his own creation. And this idea, this grandiose idea that he's going to be one of these gods or leaders in Rexburg, Idaho, with his Queen Lori, and eventually leading to the deaths of their children. That's quite an extreme road to go down to, from just, I'm going to say whatever I need to keep this lady with me, to let's kill her children. and then we're going to be free and go to Hawaii. That takes some real finagling of the mind. Do people like this? Is it possible to start genuinely believing your own bullshit to the extent, like you were saying, if you believe it, you'll pass the polygraph. When you start coming up with these own ideas in your mind, do some people believe this shit to go all the way of killing people?
Yeah. And I don't know of a case where someone has completely invented everything right out of their mind that wasn't sparked along the way. I think if I'm hypothesizing, I think what he assembled together was a lot of tidbits, morsels, and things along his life that helped him cope at every little different turn and wound he was collecting along his life. Mm-hmm. And as he's assembling them together, he's creating this narrative in his head. But all these ideas in his narrative came from somewhere. And his mind started linking them all together. And then he started putting them all together in a way to rationalize the behavior that makes him feel better and makes him, again, the most important thing to understand with all human beings, they're always going to act in terms of their own best interest, in terms of making themselves feel safe according to what they think. And if you create that kind of false narrative on what safety is, mm-hmm. and you start feeling insecure or you start feeling covetous of someone's attention, and whether that tension is going to be drawn away by children or it's going to be drawn away by neighbors, you're going to do all you can to eliminate those things that'll be distractions so you can be in control, because that lack of control makes certain individuals feel super unsafe. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's probably where it all came from.
Would you consider Chad a wound collector?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's what makes the storm.
I mean, just think about it. You know, the world's really divided into two simple categories, those that solve problems and those that collect wounds and see themselves as victims. And healthy people, and so people that solve problems generally don't do these things. Mm-hmm. I don't know of a case where a healthy outlook on life and a positive outlook and someone who sees the world as just one event to the next, not good or bad, it just solves problems. You know, with a positive outlook, they don't do these things. Mm-hmm. Now, not every person that is a wound collector, not every person that sees themselves as a victim is going to escalate to that. But every person that does these types of things, they have been wound collectors and feel disenfranchised or wronged by someone at some point in their life. And it reaches that critical point.
Sure. Let's go to Lori and talk about her a little bit and where maybe she's at, having spent all this time away from Chad in jail. Where do you think she's at in terms of still believing the doctrine that allowed all of this to happen?
That's the interesting one, isn't it? So let's go back and look at patterns behavior of life, because they're always, you know, past patterns of key behaviors generally become great predictors of future ones.
Sure.
You know, even the Murdoch trial, you know, we'll use that as a kind of an overlay here from the sense of, so here's an individual with a life in chaos and, you know, with all the financial crimes he had going on, with all the, I mean, just in the courtroom, all these stories were just one big chaotic thing. And then there's drug abuse. And I mean, just it's chaos.
Yeah.
If he wasn't involved in the murders of his wife and son, it would have been weird.
True.
Because that would have been an outlier because it's such chaos. Of course he was involved. That's why the entire courtroom, no one was shocked when he was convicted. Mm-hmm. Not even his own son.
No.
Because it's fit that pattern behavior. So now look at Lori. Lori appears to have a pattern behavior of her life of being very malleable, absorbing new information that she needs to feel accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And so if this is a pattern, multiple marriages, multiple thought processes, and just multiple everything because of searching for something she hasn't yet found. Well, this thing has seemed to go pretty sideways for her. And so I'd be very curious about what new information she's been absorbing while behind bars mm-hmm. that will have shifted again for her to feel like she's accepted or not. So I would imagine that she's more different today than the day she went in than Chad is.
I'm very interested to find that out when this all starts to come up, because the little bit that we have heard from her have been some of those phone calls that went out to her son. And in those calls, she seemed very much still in a state of delusion of the son saying, I miss my brother and sister. And she's like, oh, I do too. What am I supposed to do though? It was almost like there's nothing clicking there that you obviously you had something to do with this, or at the very least your husband did.
Yes. Well, the interesting thing you said seems to be still in the state of delusion. Well, yeah, I don't think she's ever going to lose that. Mm-hmm. It's just which delusion she's going to be in.
Yeah.
I think the delusion is most likely, maybe shifted, because it depends. If she's had no new information that she's been consuming, that delusion might not have shifted. Mm-hmm. If she's had new information, like conversations, relationships, you know, with people inside the system, that delusion might have shifted. But I think out of the two of them, she's most likely the most malleable that will have shifted out of the two.
The two of them are not been allowed to see each other than when they were in the same courtroom together. Let me ask this, and I don't know if you know the answer to it, but are they allowed to communicate through mail or anything of that nature in a case like this?
That's a good question. I would think so.
I
don't know why they wouldn't be allowed to.
I mean, I know because the prison system can look at the letters, right? And they can mm-hmm. they can determine whether or not this could be delivered to the other individual, but neither has a order against each other for communicating. But could an order like that be in place from the state or federally saying, no, you can't communicate in any way, shape, or form?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Because that would be interesting to know the information end of things. If there are still these letters coming in, like his dramatized text messages that they had going back and forth, which were just, if you want something funny to listen to or read before you go to bed, read the Chad and Lori Daybell, a text drama that went on there. But I could see if they are able to communicate that way, that maybe this is still very much at play and the delusions are just still being fed.
Totally with you on that one, because it's going to depend on what you're saying, is whether or not she's still consuming the same information or not. If she hasn't been, then there's going to be a shift. If she has been, then there won't be.
With someone like this, are they naturally able to make that shift? Does that happen very commonly based on the information that comes into them? Or are some people just so dug into something that shifts don't happen? Does that happen ever, where there's just, they are what they are?
I think we'll go back to what we were saying earlier. People will always stick with what makes them feel safe. And if she still feels safe with that delusion, she's going to stick with it no matter what. If for some reason new information comes in there that makes her feel unsafe, she's going to naturally, like us all, they're going to revert to whatever behaviors and whatever belief system is going to make them feel safe in the moment. And both depends on her ability to project out long term. But if it makes her feel safe, it makes her feel secure, it makes her, you know, it holds true with her belief system, and that belief system's reinforced, then they're going to hold true to it. But if something goes in there to rattle, and I've seen it both with healthy people and unhealthy people, you know, it really depends on the individual, but it's more likely to happen with someone that's had a pattern of life like she's had that is constantly shifting. If someone constantly is shifting, then they're more likely to continue to shift.
I'd be really curious to know how she emotionally has reacted to the trials being separated. And that mainly at the behest of Chad, not wanting to go into this early. He wants more time to build up his defense. Lori does not. I wonder if she will view that as a betrayal or making him not as safe and there as she thought that he may be.
I agree. I think it's going to come down to your last question on whether they're still in communication or not. So if they coordinated that and he let her aware of it and told her how it's in her best interest that he do this, then she's going to, and he's been feeding her information the entire time, then there won't be a rift. If they haven't had any communication and she just found out about this, it might just be one more thing to nail it against him between her and him.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Always super interesting to get the inside of Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Thank you for taking the time to talk Chad and Lori Daybell with us today. If you want to weigh in on any of the cases that we are covering for you, we would love to hear your voice. So I've got a phone number that I've created for you to let that voice be heard. You can call 888-554-5537, or easier to remember, 888-5-KILLER. You can call it 24/7 and weigh in on any of these topics, and we may use it on a future episode of the program. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the chief clinical officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.